Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Connor Newt and Ian Safar here with you on this Wednesday morning. Normally joined by Paul Korski at this time. Titans are throwing that off a little bit this week. And we normally have Charles Robinson on Thursday at 8 o'clock, but we've moved him up this week. Charles joins us now on the program on our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com of Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How we doing?
I'm doing well, gents. How you doing this morning?
Doing outstanding. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Joe Rexroad moving people into Michigan State. So he's back in your old stomping grounds up there.
Yeah, no PK to air his grievances yet about the exchange with Jeffrey Simmons. That was entertaining.
It was. It was very entertaining.
It's a football question, Jeff. I couldn't exactly hear what he said, but I did enjoy that he made sure to tell Simmons it was a football question.
That's exactly a football question, Jeff. Appreciate it, Jeff. Thank you.
Just beautiful stuff. Can't wait to get PK's thoughts on that tomorrow. Let's just start there. What did you make of the reported scuffle between Cam Ward and Jeffrey Simmons this week? Look, it's at the end of the day, is it really that big of a deal? No, I don't love the idea of your defensive tackle putting his hands on the quarterback, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely not great. And, in my mind, when I first heard it, I thought to myself, like, man, I feel like over the last, really since the draft, I've seen a lot of, like, photos come across AP of, like, Cam and Jeffrey Simmons, like, hanging out together. I remember seeing, like, a picture of them fishing together, and, like, they're always on the practice field talking, and I'm like, it doesn't seem like these are two guys at odds. And, you know, it's not, over the years of practices I've been to, it's not out of the question for, you know, the leader of the offense and the leader of the defense to get chirpy with each other and then get a little heated and mix it up. Obviously the offensive line came, you know, to Cam Ward's aid, which is what you want. You want them backing their guy up. You don't want a scuffle. You don't want somebody of Jeffrey Simmons' size and shape putting his hands on your number one overall pick quarterback. I think it raises an interesting question again about, you know, I know what Callahan said about, you know, guys not getting tossed out of practice and you can't really remember that. I have seen guys get thrown out of training camp practices, but it's usually, I mean, some pretty egregious stuff. Like, I was there when Frank Clark, you know, punched Jermaine Effetti and broke his jaw in Seahawks practice. I mean, it's pretty out there. It's now, here's the thing. If it hadn't been Cam Ward, had it been anybody else that he shoves, and, you know, and I know you can get into throwing a punch last year, but if it's anybody else he shoves, it's just the garden variety, you know. It's hot. It's the end of practice. It's Jeffrey Simmons who tends to, you know, get into some scrums at times. It wouldn't be such a big deal, but the fact that it's Ward is what obviously makes it a big deal. I don't know. I'm not given that these two guys have, you know, clearly seem to have a rapport with each other, I'm sure it's, you know, we're over it now for the Titans, but if I was Brian Callen, I'd probably just say to Simmons, look, if you're going to do that, don't throw punches. If you're going to get into a scrum and it's an intense situation, let's just not do it with the quarterback. You know, either you can find a guy who's similar to your size and shape and you know, but generally we don't want practice, you know, fights or scrums, things like that. But, yeah, interesting. It being Simmons, too, I immediately thought back to all our conversations about his fuse in practice.
Yep, no doubt. So in Indianapolis, Daniel Jones has been named the starter. And, you know, Steichen talked over the weekend, Charles, about, you know, how close it was and how he wanted to make a decision soon.
Yeah.
And he kept bringing up, like, things in operation basically at the line of scrimmage and in the huddle and all those things. And when he started talking about that, I was like, yeah, it's going to be Daniel Jones. So when I wasn't very surprised when he named Daniel Jones the starter yesterday. What did you make of it, and what does this mean in your mind for Anthony Richardson?
Well, and I think it's interesting, too, that he named him. Didn't he name him for the season? You know, when you name a guy for the season, like, you're pretty clearly saying, you know, look, this isn't temporary. We feel like Anthony Richardson's got a long way to go. And I don't remember if we talked about it on the show, but I, like when I was on the training camp tour, I remember hearing at one point, and it wasn't when I was in Indianapolis, but I'd heard along the way that, you know, Anthony Richardson was still having cadence issues, and like the offensive line had to meet with him like early in camp because they were having, you know, pre-snap penalty problems because like his cadence just wasn't consistent. And I remember thinking at that time, like, dude, we're 3 years in. Like, even if you haven't played a ton of games, you should have had the practice time in by now to easily by now to have your cadence down with the offensive line or, you know, like some, that's something that's like rookie season stuff. I mean, that's like very, you know, entry level, like quarterbacking. So to be working on that this far down the line, I'm like, man, okay, well, if they're still working on that, what other kind of, I don't want to say rudimentary things, but very basic things is he still behind on? And then you see he fails to identify, you know, a free rusher at the line of scrimmage, which, you know, at this point in his career, he should probably know this guy's coming off the edge. And if he either didn't adjust the protection for it in the first place, like if he's sitting there and he's going, I know the guy's coming off the free edge, I'm not going to adjust the protection, where's my hot read? This will all work out fine. Okay, there's that avenue. Or you adjust the protection to pick the guy up. Instead, he didn't do anything. He said he got drilled, and he got hurt. And that's another thing where you're like, okay, this is entry-level stuff that by now, in year three, you really should be turning a corner in that respect. And as you said, once the coach starts talking about just being, you know, operationally being able to do what you need to do in the huddle, being able to do what you need to do at the line of scrimmage, you kind of felt like, okay, they're leaning toward Daniel Jones at this point. And I understand it because you have a head coach and a general manager at this stage that I think are probably worrying at least a little bit about their jobs. And I don't know that you can go through another season of trying to develop Anthony Richardson and, you know, have the kind of season you need to maybe retain your job. If anything, now I kind of feel like the whole Richardson saga, it turns toward, is there anybody out there that wants to take a flyer on him and hope that maybe in year four or again, if they can get him before the season starts, you have 2 years to put your hands on him and figure out, you know, what exactly is going on there. But it feels a lot like Trey Lance to me. It really does. Like a guy who just didn't have a ton of football experience, came in needing, you know, a lot of time and work, and instead got thrown into the fire and now is destined to kind of go on that Trey Lance road where it's like, all right, let's see how long it takes and if anybody can eventually, you know, get something out of the talent package that's there.
Charles, on the quarterback front, the Cleveland Browns obviously named Joe Flacco the starter, which I thought was expected. He's a veteran. He knows that offense. My question is, they have two rookies in that quarterback room that I also think make the roster. What does that mean for Kenny Pickett? Is he trade leverage? Is he just a guy they cut? Is he a guy they keep on their roster just in case of emergency? What does that mean for him?
I think they'll keep four just because I think in an ideal world, you know, like first off, Flacco was always the starter, guys. Like it was never, that was the most hilarious quarterback competition in history. Really, the competition was at number two, and it was, is Dylan Gabriel, and it really wasn't even involving Shador, sorry, it just wasn't. Like, it was, is Dylan Gabriel going to push, you know, Kenny Pickett for that backup job? And then, you know, at that point, does Kenny Pickett become expendable, and is Shador your third quarterback? I think the injuries really kind of threw a wrench in that, you know, both with Kenny Pickett's injuries, Dylan Gabriel's injuries, Shador's, you know, quadriceps injury, or oblique injury, I'm sorry. And so I think, look, they're going to lean toward experience right now. I'd be surprised if they cut Kenny Pickett loose at this stage. Now, that said, I've talked to people in the organization. They kind of know what Kenny is. They know that, you know, his ceiling and floor are, you know, pretty close together, and he's just what he is. What we've seen in the NFL, I don't think they think there's a heck of a lot more there, you know, from the Kenny Pickett standpoint. I think what they would like to see happen now is Flacco takes over the starting role, you know, Pickett has the backup role, but they want to, I wouldn't be surprised if they really work hard to try and get Dillon Gabriel some, you know, scout team snaps and try to work with him as much as they possibly can to in their eyes, decide, do we have a guy who could potentially, if we have to move away from Flacco, do we, the guy we elevate, can that be Dillon Gabriel? We can get a good look at him. But yeah, I would be surprised if they didn't end up keeping four. I kind of felt like really from the start of camp, they were sitting there thinking they were probably going to end up keeping four quarterbacks no matter what.
So on the Trey Hendrickson front, you know, there's the Bengals reportedly listening in on offers. You still have the Micah Parsons situation out there with Dallas, which we've spoken to you about. What do you make of Trey Hendrickson? Like, is this going to end up being a situation where the Bengals trade him away? You know, Burrow talked after the preseason game the other night about how business typically gets done with them at the last minute, and he's kind of holding out hope for that. So what do you make of kind of reading the tea leaves of what's going on with Hendrickson?
It doesn't feel like they've gotten any closer at all to me. I don't feel like there was this, like, what was it, 10, I feel like it was like 10 days ago, there was all of a sudden this sort of spark of optimism, like, oh, hey, wait, no, it looks like this might get done, and then it, you know, and then it supposedly collapsed. I don't know that it was really ever that close to getting done. I think the media all of a sudden got excited about it. You know, a couple of national reporters thought it was getting close, and then, you know, it ultimately unraveled. The only way I see him, like, here are the options on the table. I think the Bengals could look at him and say, here, we're going to give you a sweetener. Like, we're not going to give you the, you know, the $40-plus million that you want. We'll give you a sweetener for this season, and then, you know, we'll figure out what we're going to do with this situation, you know, when the season's ultimately done. Or we could trade you now. I do think they could trade him. His value is capped because of his age. It's not going to be like a Micah Parsons situation where I think you get minimum, you know, two firsts and then things on top of it, even though teams know they got to pay Micah a ton of money. The thing is, Trey's asking for a ton of money too.
Yeah.
So I don't know that even not only are you going to get capped, you know, capped returns, I don't know what other team's sitting out there and going, okay, we're willing to trade for Trey, and we're going to pay him. Like, how many years though are we willing to pay him? How much guaranteed money are we willing to give him at this stage? You know, how long do we expect that we're going to have him? And by the way, I think it would have to be, there's no doubt, it would have to be a team that is in that Super Bowl window right now. I, you know, when I went around the league and I talked to different, you know, guys about Micah, and I said, you know, show, you know, tell me, let's talk about a potential team that could be out there to pick up Micah or an edge. The Chargers came up, you know, because the Chargers have cap space. They could manage, I think, to trade for one of these guys. There's a need there, I think, as well. And they technically would be in the window. I don't know how much that changes now when you talk about, hey, you've lost your franchise left tackle who you're paying. Your right tackle's moved to your left tackle. Your right guard who you signed in free agency. We'll see if he holds up. We still don't know if the center and left guard situation is sort of, I think there's enough questions there for the Chargers to go, do we want to kick in, you know, $45 million this year and hope that we're where we need to be, or do we wait to address that now in 2026? So I think that kind of messes the market up a little bit as well for Trey Hendrickson. I don't see him missing game checks. It seems like his resolve is that he will. I just can't believe that. I just cannot believe that at this stage, in this age, either he or Terry McLaurin is willing to go out there and miss game checks. And I can tell you, by the way, talking to people in the organizations, they're banking on it, that there's just no way. People inside the Commanders are like, yeah, I can't see Terry wanting to miss game checks if it gets to that point. And it's the same with the Bengals. They're absolutely banking on him, you know, not missing game checks. So I think Hendrickson, I would lean like 51% to 49%. He's in a Bengals uniform when, you know, at some point once the season starts and he ends up playing out the string and doing whatever he can do after the season ends. But and it's the same. I feel the same way for McLaurin. Micah Parsons, we'll see. He could miss games. he definitely, I mean, this is a situation where it's gotten to the point when, you know, when Jerry Jones keeps bringing up things like, I thought there was a turn for the worse when Jerry Jones all of a sudden started saying, there's no deadline, you know, for us because there's a contract. This guy's already got a contract. It's not like there's no con. And I'm like, okay, wow. All right. Well, so you're taking that stance now where you're like, hey, you're already under contract. Why do I need to do a contract with you at this point? That feels to me like, okay. And if Micah Parsons is going to miss some games, he's not doing it next year because, you know, the big dollars, once tags kick in, you know, you're not missing those game checks. If you're going to miss the game checks, not that they're minuscule now, but this is sort of your last best chance to make a statement and actually miss a couple of games and hope that they struggle, a la when Jerry went through this crap with Emmett, Charles Haley puts a helmet through the wall in the locker room, and next thing you know, Emmett's got his deal. So I don't know how many people are old enough to remember that whole saga, you know, but there was a time when that unfolded.
Charles, one more quarterback battle question for you. The New Orleans Saints are in the midst of a pretty heavy quarterback battle, and maybe the most interesting because I don't think either of them are very effective. But that's where my question is. Between Tyler Shuck, the rookie out of Louisville, and Spencer Rattler, who is a second-year guy out of South Carolina, which of those two do you think makes more sense for the Saints, considering how on paper bad their roster is going to be this year?
I mean, you know what? Just put one of them out there. Like, at this stage, I don't expect that team. It's funny to me because, you know, the thing with Tyler Shuck, he's going to turn 26 in next month, right, in September. And you're like, okay, you drafted with the clock starting on this guy. He's, you know, everybody knows his college career, you know, was insane. And, you know, he comes into the league at this point and it's like you don't know what the ceiling is because of the fact that he's the age that he is. And I don't know at this stage really how you're hurting your team considerably by not rolling him out there and seeing what he has, because Rattler's not going anywhere. Granted, I do think that Rattler showed more than I thought in the preseason opportunities that he had. And, you know, I think gave them something to think about, but I don't think either of these guys has the conviction inside the organization that, okay, we know we've got our quarterback moving forward. And I think externally looking in, I would bet you that a lot of people are looking at the Saints and going, yeah, it's probably a 4-13 team, you know, and maybe they have the first pick in the draft and maybe they start working behind the scenes to see if Arch Manning wants to play in New Orleans in 2026. So I personally think it'll be Shuck, but I think it's just sort of a moot point either way, because whoever they start, I think they'll get to the other guy at some point. I wouldn't imagine if they start Rattler, he's going to be the quarterback and Shuck's never going to see the field. Vice versa, I wouldn't be shocked at all if they go with Shuck. He struggles and they're like, let's at least look at Rattler at some point in the season. I think they'll both play at some point in 2025. So I would guess they're leaning toward the rookie that they wanted you know, to start when they drafted him. But again, I think you'll end up seeing both of them on the field at some point.
So, Charles, Matthew Stafford is back at practice for the Rams. And you know, Sean McVay's talking about, you know, the back injuries can be volatile, so they're not going crazy with it. You know, I look at the Rams, and I think they're on a short list of contenders in the NFC if he's healthy and if he's the Matthew Stafford that he has grown to be. But I'm really concerned about the back. How concerned are you about the back? How concerned do you think McVay and the Rams are about what he's been dealing with to this point?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely concerning. When I went through Rams camp, you know, back in July, and I talked to McVay about it, at the time he was like, you could tell there was concern, you know, but he wasn't at that point where he's like, yeah, this feels like it's going to be a management situation. It was more, the conversation was, look, we're going to err on the side of caution here. And McVay literally said to me at one point, he's like, I don't care about anything until, you know, like if we don't get him a ton of reps and he's out there and he rolls healthy the first week of the season, and you know, by saving some of the wear and tear of camp, we have him healthy in you know, January and hopefully February, cross their fingers. He's like, awesome. Like, he's like, I could care less. Also, he kept reiterating over and over again that he loves Jimmy Garoppolo. He thinks Jimmy Garoppolo will be starting quarterback now in the NFL, blah, blah, blah. But when I asked him, you know, I was like, I asked, and I think I said this on the show, I asked McVay, I'm like, what, you know, like, how did this happen? What happened? He said that, like, McVay had been traveling and, like, his back tightened up. And in my mind, I was like, that seems not great. Yeah. Like, traveling, like, that's not, you know, it wasn't like, hey, he's out in the field, he's working out, he's doing this or that, or he overextended himself training or something. Traveling, I'm like, that's like Larry Bird, you know, at the end of his career, laying on the floor all the time during games. You
like
know,
Rex
to keep his, seriously, Rex. Oh, poor Joe. He's not here to defend himself.
Get strays.
So. But now that it's, you know, extended this far, yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that they are now very much indicating this is going to be a management type of situation with him as they go through the season. You don't bring – they had like a mobile therapy unit out there so that he could get therapy while they were practicing. I think it was like last week.
Jeez.
They had this thing out there, and you're like, man, if you're like bringing in, you know, a mobile therapy unit so this guy can get his back worked on while you're out at practice, it's not great at all. And, you know, I at least he has faith in Garoppolo, but I'm with you. I think that massively affects, you know, their Super Bowl window, and they need him to be healthy. And I wouldn't even be shocked if at some point, once they get into the season, if this looks like it's going to be some kind of a deal, I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, they stare at a soft spot in the schedule and go, hey, let's maybe shut him down for a little bit and try to, you know, preserve this as much as we can. We'll roll with Jimmy and win some games with a really good roster, regardless of the quarterback. But yeah, it's tough, man. It's definitely something that I think you're going to see them dealing with probably all the way into January and, you know, maybe February if they make it that far.
So, Charles, on the Aaron Rodgers front up in Pittsburgh, from everything I've read and everything I've seen as far as video of him, he has looked remarkably average in the Pittsburgh offense. Is that something that, if it continues, the Steelers you think can overcome and be a decent playoff contender, or is that something you think will hurt the Steelers in the long run?
I don't know. At what point are we just like, maybe this is who this guy is now? You know, like maybe the cliff kind of came and we're here now. I will say this, we haven't seen it wasn't like he and DK played any live, you know, there were no snaps in exhibition games, so we could kind of see how those two guys vibe. Maybe the season starts and they can run I think there's going to be a heavy emphasis on the run. There's no doubt in my mind that they're going to have a two-back rotation there between Caleb Johnson, Jalen Warren, run the heck out of the ball. You know, and then maybe we can see with he and DK, and it's not like they haven't had other reps together, aside from not getting on, you know, in an exhibition game together. They have repped it all the way back to before Rodgers was even signed, and they were working out at UCLA together. So maybe there's something there to click that we haven't seen yet that dramatically changes this. It's just we haven't seen it. We don't know. So it feels to me a lot like the Jets, where it was like, well, geez, we haven't seen this. We haven't seen him work out with this guy. And then, well, what if they go and get Devontae? You know, will that change things? And it just feels like the same story again. I don't know that maybe the Achilles, after the Achilles pop, he was never going to really be the same. But don't forget, it wasn't like his last year in Green Bay was great either, at least not up to the standard that he had been. So this, you know, this just may be the reality of who he is. I would say that if it's not, we see him step on the field and we're like, oh, wow, he and DK – have chemistry that we just weren't able to really see now, you know, see in live action. Oh, Roman Wilson, who hasn't been a part of this offense, who they've really wanted to, you know, they felt like that has been a huge asset, or at least a pretty good asset they've had. They haven't been able to take advantage of. Oh, look at now he's on the field and he's making plays. And, you know, Rodgers said some good things about him. So it's possible we just haven't seen the upside, but I don't know. I tend to believe that we've been playing this game with Rodgers, and and, you know, his offensive units now going back a couple of years, even going back to his last year in Green Bay. And maybe the proper question is to say, like, let's look at the reality of Aaron Rodgers from his last year to Green Bay to now. What does he look like? He looks like he's turned into an average quarterback. And welcome to, you know, the age being what it is.
Yep. Charles, last thing for you here. You know, obviously we're going to be paying very close attention to what Vrabel and the Patriots do this year.
Yeah.
And when he's not been diving in the middle of training camp fights up there, it has been interesting to watch his press conferences and just kind of the way that the people are talking about him up there. So what's kind of your vantage point on the culture that Vrabel is trying to build and the tools that he's got in his tool set to do it this year with Drake May at the helm?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I texted somebody in the Patriots organization after the last, you know, fight where he was like on the ground. And I said, I was like, I think Mike's going to set the record for coaches getting into training camp fights with his own players by the time the season comes. And but they love, you know, the response I got was obviously they laughed, but, you know, I think they're super hyped about, you know, what he's kind of brought, the intensity that he's brought to the team. But as much as they're excited about Vrabel, I don't know, man. I think there are just other parts of that roster that they're really amped about. I think they think Kyle Williams, the rookie receiver, is going to be really, really good. And you know, Travion Henderson is, like, they're like, this is a dude. Like, he is a dude who is going to come in, and I think they feel like be instantly explosive and add an element to that offense that they have not had in a while. And they're really excited about what that's going to be able to do for Drake May. And then, you know, defensively, they've had defensive pieces. You know, if anything, especially with the additions they've made and the talent they carried over, the defense was not supposed to be a problem. He can scheme defense. So do I think the Patriots are, I think I said at one point and I was over my skis, like, hey, maybe the Patriots could be the dark horse playoff team, you know, in 2025, I feel like that was a little aggressive on my part. I do think they could be the team that we see go from, you know, a terrible record to an 8-9 and go, oh, they're respectable. Okay, they're on the right track, and we can see where this is headed. They still, though, particularly, you know, on offense, you can still see that roster needs more pieces beyond, you know, what it already has. I mean, Diggs with the age on him and the boat videos that came out, like, DeMario Douglas, like there's definitely some holes there that I think they could keep filling. And before we get out of here, I want to ask you guys something real quick.
Okay.
Or not ask you. I want to point out something because all this talk about Brian Callahan, is he going to, you know, what happens with him and can he survive? What does he need to do? And with Cam Ward, people need to understand that when you take a quarterback number one overall, it's instantly stacked against your coach.
Yep.
And whoever's in that seat, it is instantly bad for them. And like, I went back and I looked. So from 2000, there's an 18 quarterbacks taken number one overall. I think of those 18, six coaches survived it and thrived, and they were all really good coaches. I'm running short here. I'll run through the list real quick with you. Caleb Williams, Matt Eberflus, failure. Bryce Young, Frank Reich, failure. Trevor Lawrence, Urban Meyer, failure. Kyler Murray, Cliff Kingsbury, failure. Baker Mayfield, Hugh Jackson, failure. Jared Goff, Jeff Fisher, failure. Jameis Winston, Lovie Smith, failure. Sam Bradford, Steve Spagnuolo, failure. Michael Vick, Dan Reeves, failure. Jamarcus Russell, Lane Kiffin, failure. Alex Smith, Mike Nolan, stuck around for a few years, but to no success. I think it qualifies as a failure. David Carr, Dom Capers, stuck around as well for a few years. I think it was a failure. They never had any winning seasons. The six that made it, Joe Burrow, Zach Taylor, Andrew Luck, Chuck Pagano, Cam Newton, Ron Rivera, Matthew Stafford, Jim Schwartz, Eli Manning, Tom Coughlin, Carson Palmer, Marvin Lewis.
Jeez.
Those six quarterbacks are either Hall of Famers or they're at least guys that we're like, they might not make the Hall of Fame, but they were pretty dang good, right?
Yeah.
So, and by the way, a number of those coaches, you know, Pagano, pretty good coach. Ron Rivera, pretty good coach. Tom Coughlin wins a couple Super Bowls. Pretty dang good coach. Marvin Lewis was a pretty good coach. So, yeah, it's tough. So I would say it's stacked against Brian Callahan. Just from a historical perspective, you know, the chips are against him right now.
Yeah, it's pretty wild when you put it that way. Charles, awesome stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and we will talk to you next week, my friend.
All right, take it easy, guys.
Absolutely. Charles Robinson, our guest here on the program, usually every Thursday morning at 8, and he will join us next Thursday. Looking forward to that. We'll react to what Charles had to say coming up next. Take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I got some tickets to give away. A pair of tickets to Holiday World and Splash and Safari in Santa Claus, Indiana. To caller number 4. Be caller 4. 615-737-1025. You'll win a pair of tickets to Holiday World and Splash and Safari in Santa Claus, Indiana. Appreciate Charles Robinson for being with us in the last segment. Lots of really interesting stuff there. You know, the stat he came up with there at the end of, you know, looking back at the 18 quarterbacks that have been drafted number one overall, I think he said since 2000.
Yeah.
And how 6 of them have worked out pretty well for the head coach, right? Like, you've got, you know, to varying degrees, you know, Burrow and Zach Taylor, obviously, as the number one overall pick. Like, even Stafford and a guy like Jim Schwartz. Like, it was the Lions. It wasn't like there was an unbelievable amount of success there, but Jim Schwartz is a pretty good coach with the Lions for a short period of time, so it worked out pretty nicely. Stafford's obviously probably going to end up being a Hall of Fame quarterback. But between that, between what we referenced earlier in the article from TD and Jeremy Fowler about just how difficult it is for quarterbacks that were drafted number one overall to win early, like Andrew Luck is the one guy who's done it. Like, it just shows you that the odds are stacked against Brian Callahan heading into this year. And I don't know exactly what the criteria is going to be in terms of decision-making from Borgonzi and Brinker. But, I mean, obviously, when you're talking about a second-year head coach, a first-year quarterback, and a record of 3-14 last year, you know, if they're 5-12 again this year and Cam Ward just looks okay, it's like, well, I don't know that Ryan Callahan's going to be safe there. It's a long way of me saying all the numbers you want to point to, if you want to get analytical with this and you want to just look at the numbers and what history tells us about coaches in the position that Brian Callahan is in right now, as Charles said, the odds are heavily stacked against him.
Yeah, I mean, he went through that list of quarterbacks, like you said, and you think about it, the majority of those quarterbacks he listed came into good situations with good coaches. I mean, some of them tapered off. Like, the air's still up on Burrow and Taylor, and then he mentioned Cam Newton with Ron Rivera. Both of their careers kind of faded away into existence near the end. But you think about it, and the majority of the quarterbacks he mentioned have been to a Super Bowl. I mean, he mentioned Eli Manning, Cam Newton. Joe Burrow has been to one. It just shows the fine line of success and failure and how rare that is to find with a first overall quarterback. Not even first overall, just a first round quarterback. But it is going to be an uphill battle for the Titans and Cam Ward. But like I said earlier, if you put the pieces around him, obviously that's not going to happen this year, but if you look in the future and you think Cam Ward is your guy and you put pieces around him to build around, then I think the odds will be, you know, stacked in your favor ever so often as time goes on, assuming you do all the right things.
The Stafford injury, it was interesting to get Charles' thoughts on that. He's been dealing with the back, and he's been back out of practice the last couple of days. And,
Schiantica.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it's been. You start bringing in mobile back therapists.
It did not sound great.
It's not good.
Bringing in the Airstream to park outside the stadium to get his back worked on.
Well, and I guess I was not aware or had forgotten that it wasn't anything football related that he did. Like, Charles talking about how he was traveling and his back tightened up on it.
Sitting.
I mean, that sounds like, you know.
Sounds like a guy at the end of the line.
Yeah. So, I mean, the question really, like, it's great that he's back out there at practice now, but is this just going to be something that's an issue for him all year? Like, is there going to be, you know,
was it not an issue last year point?
Yeah, are we going to get 3 weeks into the season? He's like, yeah, I can't play for the next 2 weeks because, I can't move.
And there's
like
no
his
guarantee,
back just locks up.
And there's no guarantee 2 weeks will do it.
Yeah.
And you're back for a week, and then you're out again for who knows how long.
Well, and again, like, they're a team – I'm looking at the odds right now on FanDuel. So, obviously the Eagles are the favorite in the NFC, and then it's Detroit, then it's San Francisco, and the Rams are fourth. So you're talking about a team that, any way you slice it with Stafford at quarterback, is going to be one of those teams that people consider a contender in the NFC. Like, people forget last year, you know, they were on the road in Philadelphia in the divisional round of the playoffs with a chance to win that game.
Yeah.
They had a chance.
And that was the only close game the Eagles played that playoff.
Like, they had a chance to go win that game. And, you know, they brought in, you know, I know Cooper Kupp's gone, but they've still got Puka Nacua. They brought in Devontae Adams. Like, I think they've
re-signed
got a chance.
The running back.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I think they've got a chance to be pretty good. But if he's not, healthy, like, I'm sorry, there's a pretty massive difference between fully healthy Matthew Stafford and Jimmy Garoppolo out there. Even with Sean McVay and how good I think we know he is, and I know Garoppolo got to a Super Bowl with Kyle Shanahan.
He gets hurt a lot too.
Yeah. You know, I know Stetson Bennett's made some throws in the preseason and got the dog fans riled up out there.
If
Stafford's not healthy, I mean, they're not going anywhere.
The one thing Charles said that I found very interesting was when I asked him about the Browns quarterback situation, and sounds like he anticipates the Browns keeping four quarterbacks.
Yep.
Which is pretty wild to me. Like, I thought, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but I thought, you know, Kenny Pickett would probably be some trade bait. Not that they would come out and say it, because I think that would hurt their leverage, but Kenny Pickett is probably the odd man out. You're probably going to keep your two rookie quarterbacks, and then Joe Flacco is obviously your starter. But from listening to Charles talk about that, it sounds like the Browns anticipate, you know, keeping Kenny Pickett and maybe throwing him in as the backup, which I don't necessarily agree with, because I think the Browns are going to be pretty bad this year. And if Joe Flacco flames out, I think if you're that far out of it, you're probably turning to your rookie quarterbacks. So I'm still confused as to why you would keep Kenny Pickett, but I just find it interesting that they're planning on keeping him.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll have more on reacting to Charles Robinson coming next. It feels good to read this liner I'm about to read. Tune in to 102.5 The Game this Saturday at 11 a.m. for our college football game of the week, baby.
Oh,
we made it. Iowa State taking on Kansas State, presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants and Circa Sportsbook. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Be a hero and save a life today at the 12th annual Williamson County Battle of the Badges Blood Drive. The drive will be held at Brentwood Concord Road Library today from now until 6 p.m., so you got some time to get out there. 102.5 The Game will be on hand from noon to 2 with some stuff to give away and a chance to win free concert tickets as well. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. You know, it's interesting. By the way, we got some Vrabel shade on the text line. One texter says, as long as the Patriots have good players, they'll be fine. As soon as Vrabel has to develop players, they'll revert to his 9-7 meme. All right, we'll see. Can't go 9-7 anymore, by the way.
Wow. Well, yeah, no. It's impossible.
9-8.
Soon to be 9-9.
Well, unfortunately, I think you're right about that.
Well, he does have Josh McDaniels there as possible offensive guru for him.
He does. He does. We got a britches report for the Titans on Friday against Minnesota. The Titans decked out in light blue jerseys and white britches, light blue socks, according to Jimmy Wyatt.
I feel like the Navy helmet just throws it off.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the Navy helmet. I know some people love it.
Yeah. No, I want to go back to the white helmet. I love the white helmet.
Look, let me be clear. They need an entire overhaul.
I think they
uniforms.
Will.
They just did it not that long ago. I understand it. The current versions of the Titans uniforms are just atrocious. I've said it before, and I really haven't gotten much pushback from it. I'm sure some people love it, and that's fine. You're entitled to love whatever uniform you want to love. I think they might be the worst in the NFL. Like, I think they're
really?
I think they're really bad. So I would love to see them. And it's a shame because I like the color scheme, and I think they've got good opportunities there. But the numbering, like the font of the numbers, the stupid gray that's on the show. Like, I just think it's stupid.
The gray is dumb.
It's bad.
I mean, if I have to pick a worst uniform in the NFL, I think I'd go Falcons. Because I think
Falcons are pretty bad. Which is also bad because that's another team with a color scheme. It's got a chance to be pretty good. And they used to have some great uniforms.
Yeah.
And this big ATL they got on the front of them now is just awful.
Well, they don't wear them anymore, but they used to have the gradient ones that were like red and then faded into black. God, they were awful. But That's what the Titans and the Falcons have in common, is they have terrible primary jerseys, but their throwbacks are pretty sweet.
No throwbacks for the Titans, though.
No, not this
not
year.
Not this year.
It's unfortunate.
So, I don't know.
It's been the best part of the Titans last couple of years. It's like, oh, good. At least we get to watch them play the Oilers. The Oilers throwback. Not quite this year.
Yeah, we'll have to see about that, eh? I don't know. The Titans uniforms are not that great. They have not been very good.
Not for a while.
Honestly, since it's been a hot minute.
Yeah. Since the rebrand. Yeah. I think when the stadium opens, they're going to do a jersey rebrand.
I hope so.
And I think they're just going to go full Oilers colors.
I'm okay with that. That's fine.
That's fine. But
it does not bother me.
Put the Titan logo on it. Because I like the logo. It's just, I think the all navy looks all right. I don't like the light blue that much, and I think the all white with the navy helmet looks great.
That's where they're kind of in this, like to me, I was never an Oilers fan.
Yeah.
Like, the Oilers stuff doesn't really do anything for me.
I just think it looks good.
It looks cool with the blue, the light blue, and, you know, it's got that, people like the color scheme, and it was big for Bud Adams. I guess Bud Adams really liked the light blue color scheme because of the Native American turquoise kind of throwback. I don't know how much that plays into Miss Amy's thinking now of, hey, you know, we got to go back to the blue, blah, blah, blah. My dad loved this. But to me, the Oilers stuff doesn't really do anything for me.
I just can't get over the absolute hurricane that you're powering through back there. I just want to give Ian just a tremendous amount of credit out there.
If I turn on my mic.
It's like a wind tunnel.
It's like a wind tunnel
back there for Ian.
So he has just powered
through the whole time.
We're trying to keep us on the air, and this has been the most effective way with the heat situation in the studio. I got the box fan.
Ian's getting his chair blown over back there.
Blowing on the equipment and attempts to keep us on the air. So my apologies if it sounds like I'm in, you know, Jim Cantore reporting from a hurricane.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I don't know if this is a compliment or not. Well, let's do this. I got a text that says, Robbie, for someone who seems to be very intelligent, your take on the Titans uniform is shockingly bad. Shockingly bad. Wow. You know what? I'm going to take that as a compliment.
They lured you in
seems
and then kicked you right in
the crotch. Seems to be very intelligent. That may be written on my tombstone at one point.
Well,
Here lies a man who seemed to be very intelligent.
Well, you know, for one, Robbie is intelligent. But two, intelligence has nothing to do with your taste in clothing.
Yeah.
You know? It's
fashion
just
sense.
It's a personal taste. That has nothing to do with your intelligence.
I'm with you. I just think the Titans uniforms are really bad. I'd like to see them rebrand.
They're not good.
I'd love to see them rebrand. It'd be awesome.
And it's tough because, you know, the throwback situation with them and them. Everybody loves everybody's throwbacks situation, and the Titans don't have, like, a true throwback.
I know.
And so it makes it tricky.
It does. That's going to do it for us today. Connor Newt, I've enjoyed having you in the last 3 days. Thank you for being with us.
I've enjoyed being in. Thank you for having me.
Next man up with Jake Lyman is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.